welcome to the latest episode of Your Wealth with Gemma Dell, a podcast series designed to help you create, grow, and protect your wealth.
Hi, and welcome to Your Wealth. I'm Gemma Dale, NABTrade's Director of SMSF and Investor Behaviour. We get a lot of feedback from our investors about many topics, but one that's coming up increasingly often is the topic of ethical investing, choosing to deploy your money in ways that minimise harm or improve the world in some way. Once people start to go down this path, though, many find it's a real rabbit hole, understanding the different ways one can invest ethically, positive and negative screens, finding reliable data on how companies deploy their capital, and so much more. To help unpick some of the more complex issues in this really important field, I'm joined today by Simon O'Connor, CEO of the Responsible Investment Association of Australia. Simon operates at the intersection of economics, finance, and sustainability, and has over 15 years of international experience as an economic advisor, as an investment analyst, and as an environmental consultant, which is very impressive, very impressive. Prior to joining the RIAA as CEO in early 2013, he spent over 5 years at the Australian Conservation Foundation as their economic advisor, and as I discovered very recently, is on NAB's Corporate Responsibility Advisory Board. Simon, thanks for joining me.
Thanks for having me, Gemma.
So, Simon, I thought I'd start by asking you about the RIAA, so the association that you are the CEO of. Why do you exist? What's the purpose of it? Who are your members? What's the role that you play?
Sure. So our organisation is a membership body. We represent the full broad cross-section of the investment sector. So we have financial advisor members through to superannuation fund members, around 220 organisations all up, who manage many, many trillions of dollars globally. And our role is to help them to understand how sustainability-related issues, environmental issues, social issues, all these things that don't turn up on a financial statement, how they impact investment outcomes. So we work with our members to think through, right, what is the impact on climate change on an investment portfolio, for example, or what is the impact of how companies manage their internal culture and ethics and conduct in terms of how that plays out in investment portfolios. So our main task is really to help our members, the investment community, understand these investment risks, and the flip side of that being the investment opportunities that flow from these areas. But secondly, we also exist to promote the fact to consumers and investors and Australians that they can actually align their retirement savings and their investments with their own personal values and the things they hold really dear. So we spend a lot of time going out to the community saying, if you want to invest in a way that helps to build a better world, there's ways to do that today. So that's our role.
It's really powerful, and particularly that last statement that, you know, you can build a better world with the way you invest is really so important to some people.
And it sounds a little bit twee in a sense, so we should kind of refine that a little bit, but I think what's really important is today there are ways you can find, you know, ETFs or funds or pick stocks in companies and in sectors that really are kind of what's going to underpin, I guess, the economy of the 21st century, which is very different to the economy of the 20th century. And whether that's renewable energy or electric vehicles or healthcare type companies or tech type companies, it really it is a truism to say that when you have $2.6 trillion floating around superannuation in Australia, the way that money is invested today is absolutely shaping the economy and the society that we're all going to retire into and live through over the coming decade. So not only is this something that it's great that we do have the opportunity to invest this way, but in fact there's almost a responsibility to think about how we invest because of the impact that it is having on the type of world we're creating.
So important. So your website points out very clearly that there, and I find this fascinating, but I appreciate why people find it complex, there is a lot of diversity in what people mean or want to achieve when they take an ethical stance. I mean, it's a strong word in itself.
We haven't done ourselves any favours with the term that we're using this industry.
Yeah, well, we actually had a conversation about what we call this. Is it sustainable investing? Is it ethical investing? Is it impact investing? Is it responsible investing? Each of the words means different things to different people and so on. Can you talk us through what some of the main objectives are that people have with their approaches and how they differ?
So first and foremost, all of my members, all of those investment organisations that have a commitment to a responsible or an ethical approach, whatever they call it, all of them understand that there is more that's driving financial returns and investment outcomes than just what's found in the financial statements and the profit and loss statement of a company's annual report. So we know today that there's so many other factors that determine whether a company or your investment is going to be successful or not. whether these companies actually manage their staff well, treat their communities well, do damage or not to the environment, etc. All are increasingly determining the outcomes of our investments. So all of my members understand that, and in one way, shape or form, they all aim to understand and systematically analyse that as part of their investment decision-making process. So we've often called these the non-financial factors. Mm-hmm. In the past, they would have been sort of disparagingly called the sort of soft and fluffy factors, but I think as we see more and more companies really unfortunately damaging share prices from mismanaging these non-financial factors, we see they do become very financial and very very material to investment outcomes. And so that is why all of our members in some way, shape or form try to get their heads around these non-financial factors. Beyond that though, we have different reasons for pursuing this. Some of our members or some ethical investors come to this from a desire to align their investments with their own personal values and beliefs, not wanting to invest in harmful industries, harmful activities. So in the ethical end of the market, you'll often hear about divestment and exclusions, trying to avoid gambling or weapons or tobacco stocks, etc. The other end of the market, responsible investing, is really a mainstream investment strategy that just says there are investment risks we need to manage here, and we need to make sure we're considering how a big mining company is managing its tailings dams in South America, so to speak, or how a big energy company is managing the communities within which it's trying to put in place energy infrastructure, because these are determinants of whether these companies make good investments or not. So some people come to this from a purely, this is just good investment practice. Some people come to this from I want to align my investments with my values and my beliefs. And then between that, there's a whole sphere of different ways of doing this. So we're increasingly seeing what we would call sustainability themed investments or positively screened investments, where there are funds or investors aiming for more sustainable companies, particular thematics such as renewable energy or green property or medical type funds, or there's all kinds of different thematic type investments that are playing out now. So, and then I guess at the deep end of the spectrum, we also talk about impact investments today, which is where we have investment products that intentionally go out to create an environmental or a social outcome, whatever that might be, and they measure that and they'll quantify that and they'll report back in their quarterly return statements exactly what they've delivered on the financial returns plus the actual quantifiable metrics they've delivered on the social or environmental outcomes. So we have this full gamut of different options, I guess, today under this broad responsible investing umbrella.
It's really important people understand that, but it obviously the innate complexity of it tends to throw people. I've heard some traditional investors and portfolio managers use this diversity as an argument for frankly ignoring responsible investment factors. So they take the view that you can't please everyone, you certainly can't meet everyone's expectations as it associates with their values, for example, or the sorts of screens they would want to apply, both positive and negative. So why bother? Just go along the market and, you know, and invest for the best financial outcome. What are your thoughts on that one?
So you're right. So we've certainly heard that excuse as well.
I think excuse is the perfect word.
We hear that less and less frequently because it's a tougher argument to make today for two reasons. One, because this can absolutely enhance performance and outcomes from an investment perspective. So if you're ignoring these factors, you're ignoring some of the biggest issues that today are impacting share price movements on major companies. Secondly, I think it's flawed because we know that, yes, there's a lot of complexity and all humans and all Australians will have different views on what they hold to be really dear and important issues. You know, if you go and poll 20 people in the street, you'll get 20 different issues that they care really deeply about. That said, 90% of those 20 people are also going to be pretty confidently say, would not want to build their retirement savings on the back of some universal values that most Australians, and indeed our law, holds as really important. So things such as that we hear a lot about, you know, tobacco, cluster munitions, land mines, there are certain child labour, human rights breaches. There are certain things that there's a reason we have international conventions around. Yeah. And today we frequently see in mainstream investment products exclusions that include those kind of universal issues. So we often see controversial weapons and tobacco as excluded from some mainstream products. And then beyond that, I think it's all about having options for consumers with different perspectives. And then it's great that we have a great diversity of products that have all those different sort of combinations of ethical exclusions, positive screens, etc. But I think we do hear that argument less frequently today, particularly because of this performance question. And so maybe that's something we can explore if you like.
Yeah, so I we'll talk about that in a minute. One that I do find really interesting is individuals obviously have to apply their own, I guess, thinking about this. So you can choose a product where someone has done the thinking for you and they have tried to create a set of screens that they think is appropriate. So first thing I'll get you to do, explain positive and negative screens for us. Critical to people understanding
sure.
this issue.
No, absolutely. And this is where responsible and, I guess, ethical investment really started, is negative screens are avoiding the harmful stuff. You know, the industries we don't want any exposure to, so we will not, for example, invest in any tobacco-related companies, producers of tobacco. We will not invest, for example, in any fossil fuel companies, which has become an increasingly common screen. We see an exclusion. Gambling stocks, alcohol stocks. There's sort of a common basket of about six industries that we often see as excluded from ethical investment products.
Mm-hmm. So the product that you're in will not invest in anything that has significant
correct.
Or any exposure to those
correct.
Areas.
So it will be maintaining and research that allows it to understand all the companies in its available investment universe, any of them that have exposure or revenues derived from these industries, they will be excluded from the portfolio and they will not invest in those companies. Mm-hmm. Positive screening on the flip side is saying, well, actually there's interest in industries we want exposure in. Mm-hmm. So let's target and invest either entirely in those industries or overweight a portfolio towards those industries. So that can be applied through a number of different means. Sometimes we talk about, you know, one acronym that's very common in this area is the ESG, the environmental, social and governance factors. And that is basically an analysis of companies at a stock level on how these, again, non-financial issues are influencing each of those companies. And then those companies that perform really well, that are managing their ESG issues really well, might be overweighted in a portfolio. For example, it might be an index portfolio that overweights the high ESG managed companies, because there is a theory and some quite good research to support that companies who manage these ESG issues is a really good proxy for companies that have good management fundamentally and manage their risks really well. So a portfolio manager might say, let's overweight those. Others might say, let's do a positive screened renewable energy fund or a healthcare fund and really aim for those kinds of sectors and have either purely those companies in an investment portfolio or, again, overweight those companies.
That's a great explanation for people. I think that point you make about good quality management being aligned with good governance around ESG issues. Obviously, I've just said the G twice, right? Good governance around governance issues. It's really important. So if we use the BHP example where, you know, was it 35 people died? So just extraordinary. If you think if that happened in Australia, that would sink a company, but it was in a developing country. And investors can kind of put that sort of thing out of their mind. If you are just looking at the financials, you don't understand the culture and the behaviours and the governance that should ensure that sort of stuff never happens. But if you are thinking more widely about a management's responsibilities and paying close attention to that, then hopefully you will be able to understand better which companies are not going to take those sorts of risks and which ones are.
That's right. And to the extent that some research out of Bank of America Merrill Lynch, have indicated that these ESG factors have become the single most important indicator of future risk for companies. So they are seeing this as a flag of future risk. So companies that are managing this well are managing those potential downside risks. So it's really become that important to understanding the future movement of stocks.
Right, and those that are not, are a bit lax around these areas and you can
have greater exposure to potential downside risk.
That's really important. Data on actual performance, so actual performance of companies that have been rated well or investments that have been rated well from an ESG perspective versus those that have not?
Yeah, so this is
the question of performance
be...
is the one that burned in the back of people's minds. Yeah. Nice to make my heart feel good, but if my wallet is empty, I don't care quite so much.
Totally, yeah. So in terms of accessing data around ESG type factors, is that the question? We're increasingly seeing that data become more freely available. It's tended to be proprietary data that some expert research houses have provided. But we're starting to see that sort of data built into platforms in, available on online finance websites. Yahoo Finance now has sustainability data at a stock-by-stock level, for example, across ES and G factors, and you can see that benchmarked against peers in the same sectors, and you're starting to see this kind of democratization of this kind of data, I guess, making it easier to find how sustainable or how well these companies at a stock-by-stock level are managing these kinds of bits of information, these kinds of risks. But of course, there are plenty of research houses out there as well who do this as their main business offering. And so the big institutions will subscribe and buy this research directly from providers.
Sure. And when you assess the performance of products or investments, highly rated versus poorly rated, does ethical investing pay off? That's a critical question, I think, for a lot of people.
That is a critical question. It's the one we always talk about. and it's really what's become really clear, and in the last couple of years, I've been really pleased to see that, you know, we've been analysing this as an organisation for 18 years. We do this annual industry benchmarking report. And we find really strong data that these responsible investment funds have been either performing as well or outperforming against Aussie equities, international equities, and on balance growth funds, which is great. We love that data. We're always pleased when it comes out. We sort of compare it to Morningstar benchmarks and everything. But pleasingly, beyond us as the industry body that you might expect to find that data, and we're seeing more and more peer-reviewed academic articles that have gone back and done these meta-analyses or studies of multiple studies over longer periods of time, who have found that this really contributes to stronger long-term risk-adjusted performance of funds. So we're seeing really strong outcomes. And equally, we're seeing there is absolutely no reason that to invest in this way would necessitate poorer outcomes. So we're seeing competitive or even better returns from many of the studies that we look at, which is great, really great news.
Fantastic. So that's probably answering the question everyone was wondering about. Right. Got to the end and went, oh, you're going to be much worse off as a result of it. That would have been very disappointing.
And I think what's been interesting is as when ethical investing was perhaps a bit more of a cottage industry 10 to 15, even 20 years ago, there were people investing in this who wouldn't have cared about performance. It was ethics first, you know. Today, I think we've got a big portion of the market who are trying to find and invest in line with their ethics. And these are people like you or I who actually, you know, we need to still have a good retirement savings to retire on at the end of our careers. And so performance is absolutely essential. Good fund managers, good stock picking is absolutely essential. But you can achieve that without putting into doubt your own ethics and without conflicting with your own ethics and values, which is the great sort of story here.
That's brilliant, brilliant, brilliant. So a lot of our investors, a lot of listeners are very much self-directed investors. They may buy some managed products, they may invest in some managed products, certainly superannuation if they don't have a self-managed super fund. But many of our listeners have their own portfolio that's been accrued over many years, and I speak from personal experience, to go down the path of starting to make better ESG / personal decisions about your investments are right. I'm not going to outsource this anymore. I'm going to think about this more. It's quite challenging. So I love giving the example of my parents because I think they're hilarious. My dad manages the portfolio in line with their shared values, but my mum's probably the stronger driver in terms of the value set. No gambling. No tobacco, obviously no munitions or anything like that. Fine with alcohol though, because they both like wine and beer, right? So that's that's a beautiful illustration of how your personal examples.
But I love how thoughtful it is. There's been an intentional assessment of this. What are the things that are really important to us? Okay, let's actually make sure we're not just following these important issues through our charity givings or who we support, but actually how we invest our money as well. And I actually think that's quite an advanced way of thinking about it. In a sense, I don't know that everyone has sat down and gone through that process, but that's exactly what we'd encourage people to do.
It was more sophisticated than my own personal process, to be honest with you. I was looking at, God, my parents are all over this, and I haven't. But I do find, though, so in my personal life, we're trying to get plastics out of our home, for example. You get your keep cup and you're really proud of yourself for about 10 minutes, and then you realise you've got, you know, cling film in your drawer, and you've got plastic containers for your kids' lunches, and you think, oh, God, we'll move on to something else with that. So it does feel like a rabbit hole sometimes. You get started and you've got to continue it. Any suggestions as to how the average retail investor gets going with this and starts to clean up a portfolio where they may not have given this any thought before?
Well, yeah, I think what your parents are doing is the great starting point, is to say, yeah, there are some issues here that we don't like to support in our broader daily lives. And it usually starts from the negative. What do I want to avoid? Yeah. What are the things I think are harmful? Yeah. Often that might align with what you've been doing in terms of your charitable giving, perhaps, as well. And so really understand that and say, well, are there any companies that I currently hold in stocks in that conflict with that? So that's a good starting point. And we'd really encourage people to do that. If people are with superannuation funds or through managed fund providers, we'd really encourage them, if it's not clear from their fund provider, to actually email them or call them and say, well, we're not a big fan of tobacco. Do you hold tobacco stocks? Because I think it's something that the investment industry in Australia is hearing a lot more from their customers now about these issues. And to be frank, it's really helpful for them to have heard from their customers about these issues. So that's certainly a starting point. But it does get complex. You're right. There'll be people out there who, for example, are really passionate about renewable energy or climate change, and so they say, right, no fossil fuels. But for example, if you take one of our leading energy companies in Australia, well, AGL are our largest coal-fired generator in Australia, but they're also our largest renewable energy investor in Australia. So there are some conundrums that you just need to sort of personally go, well, what do I think about this? AGL set themselves up on a very strong and clearly articulated transition plan to move out of fossil fuels by X date. So yeah, we're going to buy that strategy and we'll stick with them, you know. Or you might say, nah, I've got a zero tolerance to coal, for example, I'm going to avoid it. So I think there is a necessity, probably sit down for half an hour and think through these issues and the complexities of them. But I think that's a great first step. And then there are a lot of tools out there now, and increasingly tools out there that can sort of help you. And there's information online. There are increasingly even listed, you know, funds, ETFs and others that are set up expressly to meet the interests of these kinds of investors as well. So I think there's more and more tools available to people to help them through that process.
I will warn people, there is one ETF, and I can't remember the name of it, so I'm not naming anyone, which is called an ethical ETF. Don't just buy the name. If you read the summary flyer on that, it says that the only two things they screen for are munitions and tobacco. And it covers the ASX 70, so the top 70 stocks in Australia. Now, there are no tobacco companies or munitions companies in the top 70 stocks in Australia, so they charge you double the average MER to screen out literally nothing. That's not very ethical. So you do still have to do your research, even if you are buying something with an ethical brand on it. They talk about greenwashing with products, you know, consumer products, marketing to make something sound environmentally friendly, for example, which may not be. Probably have the same...
Totally.
Things to consider with investments.
You're absolutely right, and you still do have to read the label. You know, I think for all of us, we need to take that responsibility and say, well, let's spend that 5 minutes of actually having a look. But it's a really important one from our perspective that we don't see funds out there that are misleading in the way they present themselves. And so we as an organisation have a certification program for funds where we effectively verify that funds are true to label. We don't say you must not invest in X, Y, or Z industry, but we want to make it easier for consumers who might choose to invest in those funds to find a fund that matches their values and to know what they're getting. So that's a really important example there, where there is a risk of being misleading in the way a fund is presented.
So just buying the name, which is not.
That's right, yeah. But there, on the flip side of that, there's some really great products coming through that really will account for different particular value sets and perspectives from different consumers out there, which is great. And I think the more that that funds come out, it makes it easier for people to start finding their way towards these investments and sort of enables people to be able to invest in line with their values. But read the label, always read the label.
Yes.
Because there are a lot of different approaches, and for some people they might look at the top 10 stocks in a particular portfolio and go, I don't expect to see that company in there, I don't like that company. But for someone else they might say, well, this is a really highly rated ESG company because this is what they do over here. So it's not black and white, unfortunately. So yes, we still need to look beneath the hood.
It's so on that, you talk about funds in general. Super funds obviously manage extraordinary amounts of the nation's wealth, and to your point, that wealth will create our future to a point, which is pretty powerful in itself. You know, it's a retirement savings on one hand, but on the other hand, it's absolutely infrastructure and capital for growth and all these sorts of fun things. Super funds are starting to flex their muscle in this area. Do you think it is because members are asking for it, or simply because they go, this is good practice, we need to get on top of it, we don't have a choice? I would say, to your point earlier, please call, please email, right? We always, as super funds, think that people are disengaged with their super, and often they are. The most common time we hear from people is just before they do something with their money, not along the way. So super funds do value feedback from their members. They'd love to know that people even know their money is there and that they care about it. But do you think it is member-driven, or is it more sort of board-driven people?
So it's probably a couple of factors driving it. One of the primary ones, though, is that as these super funds have become so huge, and we're now getting to a point where we're going to have a few funds, you know, $100 billion plus, they can't divest their way out of ESG risks and risks across the economy. They effectively will own the whole economy. So the success of Australia is going to determine the success of that fund's performance over the next 10, 20 years. So we call this the universal owner. Effectively, they own the economy. They're invested in the economy. So they can't avoid any of those downside risks. So they then have an inherent interest in companies performing well, companies managing all of these often long-term issues around environment and society and communities and employees, etc. And so absolutely, super funds are increasingly meeting directly with companies and having meetings with them and pushing them to improve the way they're managing these environmental and social risks and issues. And we have a much more engaged dialogue going along there. So funds understand their responsibility now to help flex their muscle to shift the performance of corporate Australia. And we're seeing a lot more interaction there going on right now. A lot more shareholder resolutions coming up at AGMs around these ES and G issues again. So whether it's climate change resolutions, all kinds of things are on the rise now. So funds are willing to do that because they know it's actually going to determine their performance over the long term. But secondly, absolutely, because they're hearing more and more from their members. Consumers are increasingly sending those emails saying, what are you doing about climate change? What are you doing about Facebook and cybersecurity? What are you doing about tobacco? You know, what are you doing about diverse? Absolutely, board diversity. There's a big conversation going on. I mean, human rights is a big conversation right now in terms of supply chain. How are you treating your labour force in the agricultural industries that supply our big supermarkets, for example? So there are a lot of conversations going on. Consumers are increasingly asking for it, and that wave of interest from consumers is certainly having an impact across the investment markets right now. So we hear sometimes from our super fund members that they hear a lot from their members about these issues now. The only thing they hear about more frequently from their members is that they've lost their login to their online accounts. So this has become a really important part of their member engagement strategy as well. So you'll see super funds much more proactively talking about what they're doing in this responsible investing space.
That's really powerful. And as you say, I mean, these guys have some huge clout now, right? They've got a lot of money to invest on behalf of their members, and they're using it for good, which is exciting.
Yeah.
Two more things. So you produce a number of reports, you alluded to it earlier, around what's happening in the industry, both finance and superannuation, you know, impacts and so on. Talk a bit about your findings.
Yeah, so we do, and we have for a long time been measuring the size and the growth and the performance of responsible investing overall. And what we really have seen is that, you know, in the last 3 to 4 years, we've seen this massive upswing in growth of funds being managed under explicit responsible investment strategies and explicit commitments to responsible investing. So we now are in a position in Australia where really one in every $2 invested is invested under some form of responsible investment commitment. So you've got your biggest institutions through to your boutiques, through to your financial advisors and wealth management firms, all committing publicly to taking a systematic approach to understanding all of these risks and issues we're talking about. Again, whether that's from an ethical perspective or just a good investment practice perspective, there's sort of the two schools. So a major portion of the industry there. At the sort of retail end, and we're seeing also a really huge upswing in the amount of consumers starting to invest in ethical, screened, sustainability themed and impact funds. So that has grown in the last year to about $50 billion flowing into these ethical funds, and that's up by about 30%+ in a year. We're about to release that report again, and we will expect to see that growing again quite significantly. Of super funds, we see about 85% of the top 50 largest super funds in Australia now have committed to responsible investing. So a really big push and a big upswing in that area. And just in the last week, we've just released a report on the size of the impact investing market, and we see about $5.8 billion, really a quadrupling of funds flowing into impact investment in the last 2.5 years. Large part of that is from green bonds being issued from banks in particular, but also from universities, corporates, and other parts of the market. So there's a real appetite for this whole area of responsible investing right now. And every element of it is seeing a really strong growth phase. And I think it just comes down to this very compelling proposition that you can invest in a way that delivers you really strong financial outcomes, in some cases even stronger financial outcomes because you're avoiding more of the risk, plus align this in a way that actually is investing the kinds of industries, companies that we all want to be building for this sort of next coming 10, 20 years. So it's a really nice, compelling proposition that many are taking up.
You think about it as a different kind of sleep at night test, right? So we always talk about the amount of risk you're willing to take, the sleep at night test. This is also the what am I doing with my money, not funding child labour and landmines, sleep at night test.
I'm truly taking on that responsibility of ownership effectively. Like, I think we often separate ourselves quite a long way from the companies we own, from ownership of companies and hence responsibility in those companies. But it's kind of closing that gap a little bit again to say, well, no, holding shares in that company is some responsibility of ownership in that company. And am I comfortable? Am I, you know, going to sleep comfortably at night knowing that I'm owning a company that has particular activities somewhere in the world? That's a good question for us to ask.
Simon, thank you so much for your time today. It's really such an awesome topic and I love talking about it with you. So we may continue.
Keep going on your plastics recycling. We're doing that one as well.
Yes, it's the thing. It's what I do. For those of you who are interested in impact investing, NAB Trades, so NAB Trades Charity Trading Day is on the 2nd of August. On that day, any trades you place, all brokerage will go to charity, to the Alana and Madeline Foundation. So if you want to have an impact in a slightly different kind of way, that is one you can look out for. 2nd of August on NAB Trade. We always love to have you with us. So thank you so much for listening to this episode of Your Wealth. We love hearing from you. If you have any feedback or suggestions for future topics, if you'd like us to go further into the ESG ethical sphere and talk a bit more about that, please just email us at yourwealth@nab.com.au. I'm Gemma Dale. Thanks for listening.
Thank you for listening to Your Wealth with Gemma Dale. To stay up to date, please subscribe to this podcast series or email us at yourwealth@nab.com.au.
Please note that any advice provided in this podcast has been prepared without taking into account your objectives, financial circumstances, or needs. Before acting, you should consider the appropriateness of the information. To find out more, please visit nab.com.au.